Well, my name is Ted Mount.
Like, that's a lot of people in the audience.
We do. They didn't bring any food or beer though, so they're okay. Getting kicked off right now.
I heard they brought tomatoes for you.
Thanks a lot. My name is Ted. This is Christina, and then also here I have with me Les.
I'm Les. I'm Les. I sailed a lot with Tim in the younger years, and
Your younger years?
Both of ours. Both of ours. A lot of sailing with Tim. And I did a little cruising with him on the big boat when he was captaining, and did some racing with him. The last thing I did was race on his Hobie 33. Holy Toledo West is it was the name of the boat.
And we also have
Dick Frazier, a longtime friend of Tim. Knew his dad well, and Tim come tagging along behind his dad, and it all started from there. And when Tim started when coming around North Cape, which I have been a longtime member, we've just had a lot of great encounters, and a lot have gone from there.
Tim, how do you say your last name?
Forderer.
Okay. Reason I wanted to have Tim on is Tim actually used to, I think, be in our junior sailing program here, was he not, Les?
He was. Tim
at
was
one time. And now he's quite an accomplished sailor, and that's just putting it mildly. I understand he was voted West Coast. Is it Yachtsman of the Year? Is that what you got this time?
Well, I wouldn't go that. San Diego.
Well, that's still pretty impressive. There's some impressive clubs there. And Les tells me that you probably have more miles than probably about any private captain in the world, or what did you say, Les?
Well, I don't know about that, but about 250,000 miles or so. It's a good chunk. It's nearly three circumnavigations, including high latitude stuff like Antarctica, Greenland, Svalbard, Norway. In fact, Dick sailed with me from Holland across the Arctic Circle into Svalbard, Norway. And on that trip, we actually made it up to 80.5 degrees north.
Oh my gosh!
Right to the edge of the polar ice cap.
He's smiling. If you could see how big he's smiling right now, he said he just thawed out too, but I don't know what that means.
Well, I believe it. You know, there's a great picture of a couple of great pictures of us holding the North Cape. We didn't have a Jolly Rogers burgee with us, darn it.
No.
We had kind of everywhere we went, we took a picture with the North Cape Yacht Club burgee, and yep. We had one when we crossed the Arctic Circle. Do you remember that sail, Dick?
Oh, very well. Riders of the Storm.
What was that like? Tell us. Share that one.
Well, crossing the Arctic Circle is, I guess, what you'd think it would be. It's probably some of the roughest weather we put the Vivid through. So that was a pretty exciting time.
We just had a guy on earlier today is talking about he does trips to Antarctica. It's funny you mentioned going up to Arctic. It was a company that runs trips, and what was the name? I forgot even what the name was. I'd have to look it back up. Polar
something.
Yeah, anyways. But he said he's doing 30 trips a year from the southernmost part in Argentina down to the Arctic and back. He said he's doing 30 a season.
No, you mixed that up.
No, nope, I messed it up.
12 to 13 a season.
12 to 13?
Yeah, he's done 100 over 130 in his lifetime.
Yeah. It's the Polar Travel Company.
What's his name?
His name is Sebastian. I can't even say his last name. Trey's going to look it up for us.
You probably know him. Dick sailed down with us down into Chile, at Chile as well. And when we were headed down to sail to Antarctica.
That is crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, a dear, dear mutual friend of all of ours is her name's Ashley Perrin. She did her first trip as a guide with me on Vivid to Antarctica, and now she's just one of a handful of ice pilots, that navigate super yachts through to Antarctica and through the Northwest Passage. And yeah, it's quite something what she's doing.
So what's it like going through the Drake Passage since you've been down there?
It's everything you've heard and then some.
Dick smiling, you know, again.
Nope. I didn't make the Drake, but
yeah, we got hammered in it, and I, you know, I probably shouldn't have gone, but it was New Year's Day and we had all the guests there, and and it ended up to be 50 knots of wind and 30-foot seas on the beam. And only Ashley and I could drive. The autopilot couldn't handle it. We could only drive for an hour, and then you had to tap out because you were just so cold and wet, and your shoulders were just burnt out. And you'd go in and lay down, pass out on the floor for 40, you know, and then you're back up and you're out there. And you'd have, big waves come over the top of your head and, you know, down your suit. And once you get out there, you know, the there's nothing stopping the wind and the water, the waves, and all of that inertia and momentum. There's no land like there is in the north to block that circulation. So it just has perpetual momentum and power, and the density of the wind just seems, 30 to 40 to 50 knots there seems like it might seem like 100 here. It's just so powerful and raw. I don't know. It commands your respect. I'll tell you that.
You just made me picture being there. I thought that was pretty yeah, descriptive right now.
It's full on, but it's full on. But you've got to, you can't to turn the boat around in that stuff probably would have been, even more dangerous than, powering through it for that 24 hours. We knew that the forecast was going to let up and we'd get to about 2.5 days to get across it. And contrarily, on the way back, about 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, when we came out, we timed it a little bit better, and we had almost, it was some rollers, but it was like glass flat.
The guy called it Drake Lake when we talked to him earlier.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, thank you.
Well,
it's hard to get psyched up to do it again.
Well, and he said that when it's more like Drake Lake, it's really cool because a lot of the wildlife comes out and you see a lot of whales and stuff like that.
Oh, for sure. Yep, absolutely.
So now, right now, your boat you're sailing right now is what? What's it called? What's the name of it?
Well, I'm not captaining a super yacht at the moment.
Okay.
But I do have my personal boat out here, and that's a Hobie 33 named Holy Toledo West.
Okay.
And a little quick history on how that boat's so sentimental to me. And really, Toledo to me, it's my roots. It's my home. It will always be my home. And I'm so grateful for the opportunities that I was given as a young kid, by Lester and Dick and Tom Andrews and, Bob Francis, a Jolly Rogers member on Wacko. His Catalina 27 is the first big boat, keel boat that I sailed on out of junior sailing. And we'd race against the Carmella, Dick Frazier and his boat and his CNC 27. And Howard Pinkley and his CNC 27. I can almost see them all. I can remember those races. But I'm so grateful for all the folks that had given me an opportunity at a young age and believed in me. And, it's gotten me to where I am today. That's for sure.
Your father and grandfather. Your father and grandfather both sailed out of Jolly Rogers and had a lot to do with the club at the beginning. And that's how, that's how that started, It's passed along.
Lester, I love reminiscing about all of that stuff. And Dick, too. When Dick would come aboard and we'd do a long passage or Atlantic crossing, we'd be on watch and we'd just catch up on all of the old Toledo, trivia and history. But I grew up on sailing first boat was Interlake number 100, and my grandpa lived in Lost Peninsula, right down from Lester's house, right?
Yep, yep. It was blue, wasn't it? Wasn't it a blue boat?
It was a blue hull boat. Yep. And my grandpa had a dock right next to Moochie's, who's related to Paul Carr, actually, a Jolly Rogers member. And yeah, good times.
It's out of rivers, born a lot of sailors, no doubt about it. You know, there's a lot of people sailed, came out of a lot of river here. And this is a long storied history, a club here.
Well, I love every event, regatta I enter out here in San Diego, I list Jolly Roger Sailing Club and North Cape Yacht Club, you know, along with my club out here. But I really love representing Toledo. And, you know, back to the Hobie 33, Holy Toledo sentimental story. You know, when I was 18 years old-ish, Tom Andrews from North Cape bought the first hull number one Hobie 33 production boat. And I was very fortunate to be asked to sail with him. And Ed Taylor and I and Cliff Vaughn and Tom and a few others. So here I am, a young kid, 18 years old, and I'm steering the first real ultralight that was ever production ultralight, and sailing in Block Island Race Week and down in Florida. Robbie Haynes doing some coaching for us, who had just won an Olympic gold medal, and now he's the sailing master for Roy Disney out here sailing Piwacket, and I see him regularly. So Tom bought hull number one, Holy Toledo, named her Holy Toledo, and sailed the heck out of that and kind of put it to pasture. And then he bought hull number three from Steve Attard, North Caper. And then he bought another one, which he has at North Cape now, called Holy Toledo East. And he eventually sold hull number three to me. And I said, Tom, the only way I'll buy this, if I can keep the name and the sale number and call her Holy Toledo West. And it's really quite something when you're out there racing and people that don't know us and our history and Toledo and Otter River and all that, when you hear people shouting across at you, Holy Toledo, you know, I just love hearing it.
So what kind of races do you have coming up out there right now? Anything coming up soon?
Well, big thing kind of on my radar is sailing a Transpac 52 back from Hawaii after the Transpac race.
And, okay.
And I may be doing the Transpac race, not sure yet. But
that's pretty awesome.
Transpac. Yeah, it'll be my fifth, actually. But it's an incredible race, just an absolutely incredible race.
Lindsay Hood's sailing on a Transpac too, isn't she? I'm just seeing stuff from her. Yeah. She's another Jolly Rogers person.
She's awesome.
She's a good sailor, amazingly good sailor. She's had a natural talent for sailing her entire life. I've known that girl since she's been little, and I tell you, she has a real knack for steering well, sailing good. She makes good decisions. She's a good girl.
She's a good coach too. She really teaches a lot, brings a lot of people into sailing here. She works for Quantum, and that was really special. It was end of the year 2023, I forget, or end of the summer, and Lester came out with the whole family. It was Bradley's. Which Bradley?
Eric Lester? Bradley, the middle, Bob and Betsy Bradley's middle son.
You tell the story for a minute.
And Eric had just, he's just retiring. He was a master chief in the Navy as a Navy SEAL, and he retired out of San Diego. So my whole family, which grew up sailing with the Bradleys, we all flew out to see him retire as a master chief out of being a SEAL. And at the same time, Tim had this race going at the end of the week. So the last day I was in San Diego, I jump on the Holy Toledo West with Tim, and he, and Lindsey Hood too, and we had three people from Jolly Rogers, and it was a and ended up winning the darn race. And thanks to Tim and some good steering and some good honest coaching out of the guy steering, and he was good.
Where did the race go to?
We went out to some mark off, like, it must have been like the Mexican and United States border.
Was it the Coronado Islands down there?
It was some mark, weather mark we went around and back. And, boy, we took off, and there's nobody. They didn't catch us till a few miles from the finish line. The big boats did. So it was a very good regatta. Neatest trophy ever seen.
I'll tell you, that was special for me. That was the fourth. It's called the Cabrillo Series, and it's a grueling series. It's four races, and the first one's like a 95 miler deep down in just off of Ensenada.
Yep.
In January, and the next one's maybe a 50 miler out around the Coronados. The next one's a 35. Anyway. Less than the whole Debbie and all the kids and Lindsay, we're all there. So that race, there was the final awards, and we won the whole event overall.
That's awesome.
Which it really is because it's a very demanding series. And but to have Les and Debbie there, really. It was the cherry on the cake. It was
a real fun time. That was a good day to sail. San Diego is a very interesting place to sail too. I mean, there was 12 meter out there sailing. There was every kind of a boat you could imagine, plus all the military stuff.
One thing I know, like my daughter used to live in San Diego, so occasionally I'd rent a boat when I went out there, is I used to say that the bay there was like the freeway at rush hour with no lanes.
Exactly.
It seems so congested in there.
Yeah, and then you have to watch out for F-16s falling out of the sky lately.
Yeah. I used to just take mine out. I'd go out at Point Loma and I just go out in the ocean. That way it wasn't as much traffic out there.
Wow, it's really a special place, to sail year-round and to have such super high caliber of sailors out here. In fact, Skip Diebold's out here this weekend. I got to see Skip. He's racing in the Etchells fleet, and so I just saw him yesterday. But it's very grateful to be here and sailing here. And
is there much foiling? Is there much foiling boats in San Diego?
There isn't. The foiling boat that I've been racing, the Birdie Fish, I was just down in Pensacola, Florida for World Sailing's Foiling Week on a boat called a Birdie Fish. It's a 15-foot two-person foiling boat. And one of my buddies, my bowman, bought it, Casper. And boy, is that a thrill. But they're just starting on the West Coast. I think there's one or two others up in LA or Long Beach. And, other than the wasps and the moths, and the foiling kites, there's not a whole lot of it.
We've got a couple guys with kites that as soon as the ice left, we got done ice boating. I'd tell you 2 days after the ice was gone, they were out foiling. With just like a wing, like a foiling wing board.
Yeah, and pretty amazing.
Yeah, they're jumping around in the water. I tell you, the ice wasn't gone for 2-3 days. And
wow,
crazy.
Reminds me of when I used to the laser that I passed on to you and Brittany. We lived up. We had a place up in North Shores near North Cape, and it was windy and the ice would break up a little bit. I would I'd skip school and drag the laser about 50 yards across the ice to that, warm water bay patch, or, there'd be a strip of open water, and I'd reach back and forth, and get the boat back out of the water before anybody would get home and get caught.
Better go to school.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned sailing on super yachts. Now, what size are those boats?
Well, the Vivid, which I spent 11, 12 years on, she was 90 feet, built in Holland by a boat builder by the name of Jongert, and designed by Ron Holland, and built of aluminum. A real pedigree boat, incredible craftsmanship, and you know, I got to spend 8 months in Medemblik, Holland, where the factory is, and we did a big refit. And Dick, you were there as well, weren't you?
Yeah, I've got to spend some time there. Very impressive place.
And so that, and you know, that's a big chunk of the captaining I've done. I, you know, I did captain a 100-foot motor yacht for a year, and then 120-foot sailing yacht for a year contract, and then most recently a 105-foot Dubois built boat and alloy built boat in New Zealand. Beautiful, beautiful sailing boat. So,
now, what's your favorite place that you've been to?
Well,
that's the toughest question.
Your list, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you, nothing compares to Antarctica.
Okay,
really?
Nothing compares to Antarctica. It is. I get goosebumps talking about it. It's like you are. It's like it's the source of nature's energy is originating right there. You know, it feels like that's where the wind is coming from that reaches Lake Erie. It's so raw, nature undisturbed. Your jaw is dropped the whole time. You're just saying, wow, wow. There's an avalanche happening over to your left. There's a glacier calving to your right. There's a whale breaching in front of you. It's just full on nature, you know, at completely undisturbed, and it's quite spectacular. There's no other place like it. But every place has its own personality, and you know, I'm really fond of Indonesia. I'm really fond of Palau, Micronesia, and you know, lots of places that there's a big piece of my heart that's still there. Dick, what was your favorite that you got to go on?
That's a great question. When you bring up Indonesia, that was just an incredible trip. I think I made three different stops in three different areas there, in Komodo, seeing the Komodo dragons, but probably one of the most beautiful places I was at, probably the Lofoten Islands in Norway, on our way from Holland to Svalbard. And that was the time we crossed the Arctic Circle, but those islands were just incredible.
Whenever you sail whenever you go out in a boat with Tim Forder, it's kind of a life-changing experience you go through. I don't care if you're on a sailboat race, a 25-mile sailboat race, a Hobie Cat race. It's he's a different kind of a person to sail with, no doubt about it. Not different, but a very good person to sail with. And
thank you. Well, like my good buddy Sam Thurber says, going on an adventure with Tim Forder is like watching a movie where the film and the audio just aren't synced up too well.
Now, have you ever done the Sydney to Hobart race?
I haven't.
Okay.
No, I haven't. But Dick's been with me in Australia as well.
Yep, spent some good time in Australia.
Yeah, you came in and gave me a break, I think. I went on holiday.
Yep, you left me on the boat, and that was a wonderful time.
What do you think about this new thing that's getting popular, this Sail GP stuff?
I mean, anything that promotes sailing is and advances the technology, it is, you know, I'm all for. I don't follow it that closely, but I will tell you that they've got an incredible junior kind of a farm team And I've got a few friends, young friends that sail with me in the summer that are part of the U.S. Sail GP team, foiling team right now.
Have you had occasion to ever be on one of those boats?
No, I haven't. I haven't. Nope.
That just looks crazy. You know, I like to watch it. But
what's the ones that sail around the world?
Oh, yeah.
The foilers that sail, we've seen in
The Volvo Ocean Racing Boats.
Yeah, the Volvo Ocean Racing Boats. We've seen them last year in Newport we were at. And Dick Frazier's son belongs to New York Yacht Club.
Yep.
And they were at New York Yacht Club, and we got to go into New York Yacht Club and see the foiling Volvo 70 boats. Volvo 70s, aren't they?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think they were.
That's pretty awesome.
And they were pretty cool. There was a lot of them, and they did like a exhibition race out in front of the New York Yacht Club, and it was blowing that day. And they were fast. They were big, fast boats. Boy, no doubt about it. You'd get someplace in one of them boats.
You said they're foiling boats?
Yeah. They like half foil.
Is that new technology the reason we're seeing that now, or is it just because somebody decided? I mean,
it's fast.
Yeah, I know. They're very fast.
And it's the way sailing's heading. I mean, in America's Cup boats and everything, sailing's heading towards foiling. And I'm not game for it. I'm not too, you know, it looks like a lot to me, but I crash hard enough on my laser how it is. I don't need to be up in the air another 5 feet, you know.
Well, it's exhilarating, I'll tell you. After, you know, racing the birdie fish and practicing training for it, you know, we're helmeted up and you know, it's, you know, you're looking all the way down range for, you know, things you don't want to hit. You know, there's a boat coming. It's quite something to lift off and be flying in the air for your first time. And, you know, the intensity of the sailing is much greater than, you know, doing 6 knots, 7 knots. And it's full on. It's quite an experience. It's addicting.
Yeah, I after getting done ice boating this year, I understand. We had a heck of a year ice boating, so it was a very good year sailing.
Yeah, you get it. You get it.
Yeah, it's, you know, everything else into ice boating, everything else looks slow to me.
Do you see yourself getting into the foiling stuff? Foiling sailing?
Well, is that for me or?
Yeah, I'm just saying, do you see yourself getting into that at all?
Well, I am in it a little bit as a crew,
right,
with my my buddy Cass.
Your buddy in Florida,
Well, he's from San Diego.
Okay.
But, okay. We raced that fleet down in Florida.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Tim was like he wasn't a sprinter. Tim's a distance runner, no doubt about it. He'll take you for a sailboat ride you're not sure you want to be on, believe me. He's the ones I've been on with him, I tell you what, he's
Boy, do you remember, we did the Panama Canal together.
Oh, yep. Wow.
Lester and I, and Dick, did you do the Panama Canal?
Nope, I got up to the Panama Canal.
Dick came home.
I was there, but I didn't go through.
I went through the Panama Canal on the Vivid, and then I went out, we sailed all the way out to the Galapagos Islands, and it was like a 7, 8, 9 day sail. It was a long sail into the current rough too. And
you know, that area that we sailed, that, you know, that course from Panama City to Galapagos is in what's called the intertropical convergence zone. You know, we're just before, it's like the 10 degrees of latitude above and below the equator. And in that, you know, it's really, really rough weather. You know, it can be really crazy weather. Do you remember the lightning on that trip?
Yes.
Lester?
Yes. Yes. It was like, you know, it was like a storm we sailed in for a long time. It was like a thunderstorm, but it just kept going. And the waves were big. I unfortunately get seasick, and you know, it gets me. I've only ever been out in two big ocean sails in my life, and both of them has done me in. And you know, there it's you got to look at yourself before you head out in the ocean. You go sailing with Tim Forder, he's going to take you for a ride you're not sure you want to go on. but it's good. It's good. It's an interesting adventure always.
So you guys went to the Galapagos, huh?
We went through, we sailed out of, I got on the eastern side of the Panama Canal and went through the canal, and then we provisioned and stuff in Panama City. And I'm not sure, we were there like 3-4 days. And then we headed for Galapagos, and I think it was 9 days. I was gone, I think, 3 weeks with them when I went. And it was a long sail. Very long. So, but once we got to the Galapagos Islands, it was just amazing place. Amazing place. And, you know, it's, it was to see another culture like that in Ecuador was quite a eye-opening experience for somebody from Toledo, Ohio.
Hey, speaking, you know, that, go ahead, finish up. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I think Dick and I and Lester and I, and I do all the time, I kind of mutter to myself, you know, wow. Look at us, a couple kids from Toledo, Ohio. Look where we are right now. You know, it's Toledo made me who I am, and I'm you know, forever grateful and loyal to Toledo as my hometown. So
you sailed juniors, didn't you? You sailed juniors out of Jolly, or did you sail in North Cape?
Oh yeah, nope. Yeah, Jolly Rogers.
Now,
you know, back then, what we had, we didn't have any Opties or Sabots or any of that stuff. We were sailing Cat Yaks. And 320s, if you remember those.
Yeah, oh yeah, I do. They were, they taught a lot of people to sail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I read, when I was reading a little bit up on you, you used to work with an organization called Yacht Aid.
Yeah.
Yep. Can Yacht you talk Global. A little bit about that? Because that looked kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And it's a pretty timely question. Yesterday, the founder, Mark Drulau, passed away last week, and yesterday was a celebration of his life. And in fact, Lester Antonio Moreno from Galapagos was here for yesterday. And but Yacht Aid Global was founded by Mark, and Mark was a yacht captain like myself, went around the world and realized that it was pretty easy to carry some school supplies and books and medical supplies and sports equipment with them and you know, make donations and get involved in the communities as he went along. And which is kind of a no-brainer. And when he came ashore to start a family, he started Yacht Aid Global. And Yacht Aid Global has become really good at disaster relief, what we call last mile logistics, where if there's a hurricane, typhoon, or you know, in these small island communities around the world, oftentimes the big NGOs can't get there, and there are super yachts in the area that can be first responders and, you know, pull up, and automatically they've got communication systems, you know, the SAT systems on board. They can start making water. They can start doing medical triage. You know, it's, and that's what Yacht Aid Global has become. And, you know, as I sailed around the world, when I first went into Komodo, I remember I called Mark. This is, gosh, 15 years ago or so. And I said, how do I, you know, I want to donate some school supplies and get involved in the communities. How do I go about that? And he said, well, you know, you need to introduce yourself to the village elders and the park officials and, you know, get their blessings and understand the protocols and so on. So I did that, and We brought a good load of school supplies and sports equipment into Komodo. But here's the kicker. Here's where Mark and I relationship really started. As we were leaving the school, this is a one-room school in Komodo National Park, Indonesia. You know, a place that doesn't have any fresh water, doesn't have any real trees, you know. It's a pretty barren place that's run by the Komodo dragons. And the teacher came up to me and said, "Captain Tim, you know, we really appreciate you and everything you've done here, but we need a little more help." And when you see these young kids, they steal your heart in a few moments. But I said, "Anything you need?" And he said, "Well, right now our teachers are spending half of their time teaching and the other half of their time keeping the Komodo dragons from eating the kids." And I said, "Wait a minute, come on, really?" And that was a fact. So I called Mark Drulop at Yate Global, said, "Hey, Mark, we've got a great opportunity here. I'm going to do it if you want to join with me." So we both came up with the funding, and me and my crew, we stuck around for 2 weeks and partnered with the villagers and the village chief, and we had to make a trip to another island to go way up into the highlands and cut down bamboo, and it was a big deal. And 2 weeks later, there was a fence built around the school, and that kind of launched my work with Yate Global. That everything I did going forward, I did under their banner, and ended up bringing clean drinking water to probably 70,000 plus people all throughout Southeast Asia, Indonesia, and Micronesia. The other thing I was doing under the banner is what I call the Do What You Love talks. And I was real fortunate to be able to talk with about 10,000 young people all around these small island communities. And yeah.
My wife was a teacher in Toledo Public Schools.
And yeah.
She always, when Tim came to town, she always got it together to Tim to come in and talk to the kids about, you know, following your passions, I guess it is, you know. And it was always a very invigorating talk when he did. And that was a good thing. That was a good thing. The kids really sat up and took notice. So.
Well, thank you, Lester. I'll tell you real quick. I'm actually writing a book right now, and it's called Three Little Birds, after the Bob Marley song. And if you don't mind, I'll just share a little bit of that story, because it's where the origin of the Do What You Love talks. And we were in Sarong, West Papua, which is part of Papua New Guinea and actually part of Indonesia. And we had just got done spending 3 or 4 weeks diving Raja Ampat, which is some of the best diving in the world. And we were about to leave and sail towards Borneo, and our yacht agent, Wahid, came up to me and said, "Hey, Captain Tim, can you take a couple minutes and go with me and talk at my school?" And I immediately said, "Yes, absolutely." We got on the motorcycle, and when I arrived at this school, I was basically mobbed by all of these young kids. You know, you're the only white person, and you stand out. And they were so enthusiastic. And I stood in front of that classroom. There was, probably should have held about 30 people, but there were, I think, 100 kids packed into it. And no preparation or anything. And while he's standing next to me, I said, and the first words that came out of my mouth were, "When I was 8 years old, my dad taught me to sail. And I took to that like a fish in the water." And I waited for Wahid to translate. And I could see a couple of the kids lighting up. And then I shared with them, and that's how I got here today. I was able to turn my passion for sailing into a job. And that's how I got here today. Where he translates, and I could see the light bulbs going off. And, you know, we chit-chatted for a little bit longer, but then we had to go, and Wahid said, wait, we've got a surprise for you. And she'd been teaching the kids English, right? And they had been practicing all week a song for me. And so they, all of these 100 kids stand up, and they're singing a song in English, something to the effect of, "Dear Captain Tim, thank you so much, you know, for coming and spending time. always take us with you in your heart. You'll be in our hearts, you know. So here I am. I'm bawling my eyes out. I'm so emotionally moved by this in front of 100 kids. And I'm like, oh my God, really, it was powerful. And just as we were to leave, a little girl in the back of the room raised her hand and said, Captain Tim, can you sing us a song?
Riders in the Storm.
yeah. But the first thing that came to my mind was, rise up this morning, smiled at the rising sun, three little birds. And before you knew it, all 100 of those kids were singing the Bob Marley song with me. And it was so moving. And as I processed that over the next month or two sailing, I'm like, there's something there. You know, that they were, that was a powerful moment, just spending time with those kids, showing up and spending time with them. And that became the first Do What You Love talk. And, you know, I ended up talking with over 10,000 young people, and each talk started with, when I was your age, you know, I learned, my dad taught me to sail. And really, that tracks right back to, connects right back to Toledo and sailing on the Otto River, sailing at Jolly Rogers, you know, going down the basement at Jolly Rogers and pulling the sails out and walking across the street to the rack and launching the Cat Yak or the 320 or, you know, good times.
Tim, this has been awesome. I would like to be able to talk to you again if possible. I got some other people already waiting. If it's okay, I'm going to contact you again. I would like to continue some of these conversations if that's okay with you.
That'd be great.
All right.
If I can have Lester and Dick with me.
Yeah, absolutely. They can come anytime. They're always welcome. Anything else anybody wants to add before we let Tim go?
We haven't even started the adventure stories with Tim.
I know,
Porter.
But we'll do it again because I would love to do it again.
I would like to add though. Things about Tim that has opened my eyes to the world. Probably the trip to Indonesia, most specifically, because of the things that I seen, and I at that time, I got to see Tim in action. We went to a library, and Tim handed out, I don't know, 100 book bags to these little kids. And that was coordinated with friend Neela, and I'm trying to think of her name of her foundation of libraries. If you can,
Rainbow Reading Gardens.
Rainbow Reading Gardens, which was just incredible. And I've always been so thankful for Tim for that moment in my life.
Oh, thanks, Dick. You're going to, I just talked to Neela. She's now up to 251 libraries.
Wow.
Yeah, incredible.
Lester, you got anything to add?
It all starts sailing on the Otter River. All right. That's where it starts.
Amen.
Thanks, Tim. I'm gonna